Last week we looked at Daniel 5 and how the Babylonian king Belshazzar saw the writing on the wall just before the Persians conquered Babylon and killed Belshazzar. For centuries, scholars believed that Belshazzar wasn't a real person. There was no evidence of his existence outside the Bible, and the general scholarly consensus was that the writer of Daniel had just made him up. The Bible wasn't considered a reliable historical document. However, in 1854, the Nabonidus cylinders were discovered. Big stone cylinders like this with writing all the way around them, the Nabonidus cylinders. And they detailed how Belshazzar was the son of the king Nabonidus of Babylon, and that Belshazzar had ruled Babylon whilst his father was absent for 8 years, and that Belshazzar was killed when the Persians invaded and conquered Babylon. So we know from sources outside the Bible that Belshazzar was indeed a real person, and that he did indeed rule Babylon as the book of Daniel tells us he did. So why am I telling you all this about Belshazzar when the ruler in our Bible passage today is Darius the Mede? Well, because there is currently no evidence outside the Bible that Darius the Mede ever existed. And so scholars debate, is Darius a literary fiction, a character invented by the writer of Daniel? Was he a real figure known to history by a different name? There was a Persian general called Ugbaru who commanded the army that conquered Babylon, but he died within about a month of this happening, and he was replaced by another Persian general called Gubaru. And Gubaru was actually a Mede. He was from Media, and he was made regent of Babylon. Or was Darius another person altogether who archaeology hasn't yet discovered? Personally, I'm fond of the idea that Darius and General Gubaru are one and the same person. I don't suppose it really matters, but as you know, I love history and I love exploring Bible history. Daniel by now is an old man, maybe in his 70s or even 80s. And having been brought to Babylon from Jerusalem as a teenager, he has spent perhaps 60 or so years in the service of the Babylonian rulers. The first of the rulers we met as we journeyed with Daniel was Nebuchadnezzar, who was the second and most powerful king of Babylon. We read how he willfully resisted the hand of God, persecuted godly men, attempted to kill Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego by throwing them into the furnace. Nebuchadnezzar was witness to miracles and visions. He saw God at work through Daniel, and yet he continued to resist God. It wasn't until he was driven insane by God that Nebuchadnezzar finally acknowledged that God is sovereign over all. The book of Daniel then skips over several Babylonian kings, and last week we looked at Belshazzar, grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And Belshazzar had so offended God that God didn't even give him a chance. A mysterious hand wrote on the wall. Daniel pronounced God's judgment upon him, and that very night he was killed and his kingdom taken away from him. Which brings us to Darius the Mede. Whoever he was, he ruled in Babylon on behalf of the Persian Empire. And Darius is a bit different in that he is immediately benevolent towards Daniel. He sees in Daniel something that sets him apart from the other courtiers. The NIV says that Daniel distinguished himself because of his exceptional qualities. The NRSV says he had an excellent spirit within him. I don't know about you, but I'm not sure that at 80 years old, having worked since I was a teenager, I'd particularly want to be distinguishing myself and working so hard that I got appointed as one of the top three ministers in the empire. But we've seen this with Daniel throughout his life. It would have been so easy for him as a young man, taken from his homeland, to serve a foreign king just to do the absolute bare minimum. It would have been easy for him at 80 just to fade into obscurity. But that's not in his nature. His faith is so strong, and the Spirit of God within him is so tangible that he continually finds himself thrust into the limelight. In Jeremiah 29, the prophet Jeremiah is told by God to write a letter to the Jews living in exile in Babylon. And I've no doubt that Daniel was one of the recipients of this letter. Jeremiah wrote, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." Daniel, it seems, took those words to heart, and for 60 years, despite living in a foreign and often hostile environment, he strove to bring God's peace and prosperity to the city of Babylon. And can we, honestly, hand on heart, say that we do that? Do we, like Daniel and Jeremiah, seek the peace and prosperity of this land? As we look around Paul, as we look around the UK, as we look around the world, we may not like what we see. Local and national government policies that seem to stand against what we believe in. People from all walks of life behaving in wildly immoral ways. War, violence, crime. And the temptation for us may be just to write them all off, to say, you know what? To hell with you. I'm saved. I'm all right. I know where I'm going. And you lot out there can just go down the toilet for all I care. But that is not the godly way. And that is not Christ's way. We are to seek the welfare of the city to which God has sent us, whether we particularly like being here or not. And seeking is not passive. It is active. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Christ didn't passively stay safe and sound in heaven. He was sent to sinful earth by his Father. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city. And if you don't have the energy that the 80-year-old Daniel had, then you can still pray, you can intercede, you can approach God in supplication for our town and for our land, for our world. You can read and you can study and you can continue to learn about God and about faith. It's clear that Daniel was a prayerful and studious man. You don't have that sort of faith and you don't have that sort of excellent spirit within you unless you pray and you study. And it's that life of prayer and study which gets Daniel into trouble. decades earlier, while he was still a young man. He'd seen how wicked men and a prideful, egotistical king had sought to kill his three young compatriots, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their crime? Refusing to bow down and worship an idol. Their punishment? To be thrown into a blazing furnace. The outcome? God saves them. The king vindicates them, and their accusers suffer the fate which was meant for them. Daniel's accusers are jealous. Jealous that this old man who should be a has-been, who should be at home with his slippers on and his feet up, is being touted for the top political position in the land. And how much of our politics today consists of petty, fragile egos and jealousies rather than a genuine concern for the peace and prosperity of the land? There is nothing new under the sun. Daniel's jealous accusers try and find some dirt on him, something that will force Darius to remove him from office. But verse 4 says they could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. So they decide to use his faith against him. And it's quite a common motif in the Bible. Godly, faithful people are accused and persecuted because of their faith. In Esther, Haman accuses the Jews of being a danger to the king because of their religion. Even Jesus at his trial was accused of religious crimes. So Daniel is not alone in having his accusers set him up because of his faith. Darius naively agrees to a petition to stop people praying to anyone except for him for 30 days. It wasn't uncommon in ancient times for kings and political leaders to be considered gods. The Egyptian pharaohs, the Roman Caesars. Even in the book of Acts, we see the Jewish king, King Agrippa, being hailed as a god by the people. But for Daniel, despite his position in the empire, despite his age, despite how much easier it would have been just to give in, it's only 30 days after all. The very idea is abhorrent. There is no way he is going to stop praying to God. And so, as he always has done, he returns to his home 3 times a day and he bows down and he prays to God. Note that as with the three youths earlier in Daniel, what he is accused of is true. Daniel has broken the law. The law said no praying for 30 days, and he deliberately and blatantly broke that law. As an army chaplain, one of the things I would teach soldiers was that they weren't to obey clearly unlawful and immoral orders. Not always easy for a young soldier to go against the grain. But perhaps the behaviour of Daniel and the earlier three youths says something to us about how readily we accept unjust and immoral laws in our own time, in our own country. Interestingly, later on in verse 22, Daniel says to King Darius, "I was found blameless before God and blameless before you, because I have done nothing wrong." Daniel wasn't wrong for disobeying the law. It was the law that was wrong. Imagine the sort of men who would conspire against an 80-year-old. Imagine the frail egos and delicate pride that would cause men to want an 80-year-old politician to be thrown to the lions. Maybe something there about something that happened recently, just last week, with one of our own politicians. I'm sure that when you were at Sunday school or at school assemblies, you heard this story, and it was the lions and the lion's den that was the main thrust. And you may be thinking, well, Ken's getting towards the end of his sermon on Daniel in the lion's den, and he hasn't even mentioned the blooming lions yet. A man of God being thrown to the hungry lions, sealed in their den overnight, rescued by an angel, and then his adversaries thrown in instead of him and being gobbled up straight away by the same hungry lions that left Daniel alone. It is exciting, but I don't think that it's actually the main thrust of the story. The main thrust of the story is the man Daniel, his unwavering faith, his uncompromising obedience to God, 60 years of seeking the peace and prosperity of the city, an often hostile city. 60 years of speaking truth with love and humility to kings and to rulers. 60 years of choosing to do the right thing, when doing the wrong thing would be so much easier. 60 years of standing up to corrupt politicians, challenging immoral laws, despite huge personal risk, and ultimately receiving vindication, both from a human king and from God, the one true king. Thank you.